Introduction: Why I Can't Be Left Unsupervised. I ran across this quote a few years ago that I haven't been able to get out of my head. It would be fantastic on a needlepoint canvas, or maybe on a crocheted item of some sort, but let's be real, I don't even know the difference between needlepoint and crochet, but my crocheting friends recently started referring to themselves as hookers, so that's a whole situation. Nonetheless, here's the quote I love. There's very little difference between people, but that little difference makes a great deal of difference. Unknown author. Isn't that the truth? We've all encountered a person, or two or three, in our lifetime who is simply different from the rest. It's hard to pinpoint what makes them stand out because in so many ways they're just like us. There's no difference in what they wear, what they drive, or where they live. But the difference is much more than pedigree or geography. It's their life philosophy. I'm reminded of a time when Jesus was talking about loving our neighbors and a lawyer asked him to define exactly who constitutes our neighbor. Blessed lawyers. I get this, having once been a lawyer myself in the days of yesteryear. Jesus responded by telling the story of a guy traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho who got beat up and left for dead on the road. Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37. If hearing the story makes you think of Monty Python and the Holy Grail and you silently chant, "Bring out your dead," please know you're my people. A priest and a Levite saw him lying there, but passed right on by without stopping to help. A Samaritan also came upon the injured man, but he actually stopped to care for this man's injuries and pay for a place for him to recover. What's the difference in the people Jesus described in that story? It was some combination of outlook and availability. Each person had a unique outlook on the situation, and that outlook informed their actions. The robbers saw this Jewish man as a weakness to be exploited. The Levite and the priest saw him as an obstacle to be avoided. And the Good Samaritan, despite Samaritans and Jews being bitter enemies, saw this broken and hurting man as a neighbor worth loving. An outlook marked with compassion, mercy, interruptibility, risk-taking, availability, intentional living, and a willingness to serve others when it's inconvenient can't help but inform our actions. That kind of mindset produces small pivots that significantly affect those around us. These things separate the men from the boys, or the crocheters from the needle pointers, so to speak. These are the little differences that make a great deal of difference in our faith walk, our parenting, our workplaces, and our friendships as we travel our own personal roads from Jerusalem to Jericho. The roads we travel daily are where we encounter the broken, the hurting, and those desperately needing neighbors to act neighborly, hence Jesus' point, friends to act friendly, and Christians to act, well, Christianly. It could be the road between the partners meeting in your desk, or between the gym and the carpool line, or the dorm and the intramural field, or maybe it's just the road from Dallas to Houston, which is the most unfortunate road because it holds my most recent embarrassing moment. I was invited to speak at a women's event a few months back. It was a larger speaking event in Houston, so I was equally nervous and excited. Houston is only a few hours from where I live, so I decided to hit the open roads and drive rather than fly. An amazing group of friends often travels with me because they love to hear me speak. Except they recently told me they don't go because they love to hear me speak. They go because they think I'm marginally incompetent when it comes to travel logistics. So there's that. I let them know I was fine to drive myself to Houston, thank you, and off I went. About halfway there, I stopped at Buc-ee's for gas and a Diet Dr. Pepper. Buc-ee's, you ask? Well, it's a Southern thing, and please let's not dare call it a gas station. That's heresy. Buc-ee's is a wonderland with treasures like brisket sandwiches and homemade fudge, beaver-themed underwear. There are pickled quail eggs, sausages on a stick, and a 7.5-pound bucket of bacon grease with a sign above it that reads, "Great gift idea." I'm not even making this up. An entire wall is devoted only to jerky. Another display is filled with Buc-ee's onesies, one of which my husband weirdly owns and even more weirdly dons once a year on Christmas morning. And big old deer feeders are right around the corner from the fancy soaps and banana pudding. The bathrooms are pristine. Oh, and yes, Buc-ee's even sells gas. Now, I have no idea why the name Buc-ee's is hyphenated. Are they a product of divorced parents? Are they trying to keep name recognition for professional purposes? Some questions I cannot answer. But I do know that if loving Buc-ee's is wrong, I don't want to be right. On this particular day, I was pumping gas when a lady and her young daughter approached me for help, saying they were hungry. I honestly had not one cent of cash with me to help them out, but they clarified that they needed food, not money. The usual questions ran through my head. Is this a scam? Will this make me late for my important speaking engagement? Are they really hungry? Do they want my kidney? Skeptically and somewhat reluctantly, I grabbed a stash of snacks for the mother-daughter duo while I was inside the store. I handed them the bag upon returning to my car, and they thanked me profusely. Feeling like I was running behind at this point, I hurriedly jumped into my car to leave. As I was driving off, I heard a loud bang behind me and slammed on the brakes. Only then did I realize that with all the chaos of buying snacks and safeguarding my kidneys, I forgot to remove the gas nozzle from my car. The hose was flapping in the wind with no pump in sight, and no, it wasn't spewing gas because, apparently, we Bucky's folks do this with some regularity, so it automatically shuts off. Thankfully, I'm good under pressure, and I immediately knew what to do. Like when you fall down in junior high and in a split second you have to decide if you're going to lay there and wail or jump up and act like nothing happened. I put the car in park and marched intentionally to the rear of my vehicle to remove the dismembered hose from my gas tank. Head held high, I walked the 10 feet back to the pump, hose in hand, and returned the nozzle to its rightful place as if nothing even remotely strange just went down. Now, even for Bucky standards, it got a little weird when I nervously stayed at the pump for a minute or two and randomly started punching buttons on the display screen. I mean, what in the world? Was I trying to convince the 20-plus eyes watching me that everything would be fine as soon as I finished handling some quick international business on that tiny little screen? Was typing away feverishly somehow supposed to explain away the idiocy of ripping that gas hose from the pump to kingdom come? It's still a mystery why my friends don't trust me to travel alone, but here's the point. Jesus' point. Practically loving our neighbor means having eyes that are less fixed on the platform and more concerned with the needs of the pump. The ones who don't miss it know the moments that matter the most are often camouflaged in untimely delays, inconvenient asks, and even humbling course corrections. Take a second to think about the people who have been most pivotal in your life, those people who are ingrained in your story simply because of how they have lived. I think about my husband, Mike, my mom, my two dear friends, Stephanie and Brandy, and several others whom you'll undoubtedly hear about in the chapters of this audiobook. It's not their accomplishments that have marked me. It's not their leadership skills. It's not their political views, parenting successes, or social media posts. It's not really even their words. It's their availability, their steadfastness, their generosity, their grace, their loyalty, their kindness, their willingness to respect that I'm not a hugger, their quiet spirits, and especially their unwavering love for Jesus. It's the God-given few in our lives who will walk through the fire with us in our darkest hour, yet still interrupt our most profound thought with, "Girl, you've got the most heinous piece of spinach stuck in your teeth." The Good Samaritan story ends with Jesus saying these four simple words, "Go and do likewise." Both a challenge and a charge for reframing how we walk, or more realistically, how we travel in this life. A call to consider an outlook that worries less about how the world labels success and instead resolves to slow down, be kind, live less offendable, assume the best, making a difference by pointing others to Him rather than ourselves. It's doing the very things I'd planned on doing before I got hooked on capsule wardrobe reels and then forgot why I went to the pantry. And this is really what this audiobook is about. Think of me as the friend who's willing to lean across the table and discreetly, kind of discreetly, tell you there's food in your teeth. Not because I've figured it all out, but because I've lived enough life with lettuce dangling from my smile and gas hoses hanging from my car, to realize the things we so often miss in our faith, parenting, friendships, marriages, and how we walk our daily lives can carry eternal significance if we'll just let Jesus get a hold of them. So my guess is that if we follow Jesus' instructions and go and do likewise, lives will be transformed, not the least of which is our own. And one day when we're old and gray with bursitis and chin hair, we'll look back and realize that the moment-by-moment decisions of figuring out what really matters were the little difference that made a big difference.